and major cuts to the state budget, ballot measure 30 being the latest catastrophic thing to happen that will affect the Oregon Health Plan in a negative way. And so as a result of that, enrollment in the Oregon Health Plan has gone down significantly, especially for single adults, non-pregnant women.
So we saw really big reductions beginning in 2003, and that was before Measure 30. Can we talk briefly about what changed in 2003?
Didn't it actually happen in November of 2002 that the first cuts were made to the Oregon Health Plan?
That might be true.
Yeah.
And Oregon's recession began a year or so before that, really around 2000. Throughout the 90s, there was a surplus of state money, and unfortunately, that was not put away for health care. And when negative numbers started coming in quarterly on the state's budget, different things started being really looked at hard and scrutinized, and the Oregon Health Plan was parceled up into the plus and standard. Premiums were, at one point, homeless people and victims of domestic violence could have their premiums waived. That was done away with. And premiums were increased as well, and copays were added. And people had difficulty paying those premiums and being able to stay on. And they also enacted in February of 2003 a disenrollment policy if people did not pay their premiums on time, irregardless of being homeless or not, then they were taken off of the OHP for a six-month period, and they were not allowed to re-enroll until their six-month period was up. And when that period was up, they would have to then pay for the premiums that they owed, and they would be allowed back on.
And that was when you saw the first real cut in people losing health care services. There were 40,000 people in 2003 that lost health care services for lack of paying premiums.
And how many were there before?
Let's see. It was like 120 in late 2002, and then 120,000.
I think it was a little bit less than that.
Give it to Jen.
I have the numbers here. In 2000, they have gone down. At one point, I know there were around 110,000 adults. This is not counting the OHP plus population, which is pregnant women, children, blind, disabled, Native Americans. The OHP standard is primarily the adult that's on the Oregon Health Plan that doesn't have a disability.
Okay, and so we were at 110. It went down by around 40,000?
And a lot of that was also due to some of their benefits were cut.
Mm-hmm.
OHP Plus kept mental health and chemical dependency. OHP standard for the adults, that was dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, managed care plans got out of covering adults. Access became even a larger issue for many adults, finding a doctor that would see them under the Oregon Health Plan. And then many, actually 40% at one time, were between 0 and 10% of the federal poverty level, which I think a large portion of that is the homeless population. And many, many of those were unable to meet their premium payments. They were kicked off, and I think that's where one of the most significant reductions in population has been seen.
You know what I often tell people about this, because where I work, I was had access to seeing this, is that I knew people. What happened, there were people that had absolutely no income that were required to make really very low monthly payments, $6 a month. But if you have zero income, $6 a month might as well be $6,000 to a certain extent. I knew people that were collecting cans to get the money to mm-hmm. make their OHP premium payment, and during that time you'd saw somebody with a sign out that said, you know, need money for OHP premium. You probably wouldn't have believed them, but it could have been true. So people didn't make their payments then,
right?
And they got dropped from the plan.
That's right.
Would those people making their premium payments have been a significant amount of income to OHP for providing benefits.
Oh, do you, put another way, so is the question, were premiums instituted to make money for the health plan?
Yeah.
No, I don't think that's why premiums were instated.
And in the long run, if you lose someone from their health insurance because they can't pay $6, but then you know, they have kidney failure or they end up in jail or in the emergency room, you're really ending up costing everyone a lot more money. There was a study done by Care Oregon after ballot measure 30 passed that that each one of us will see within our own private insurance an increase of roughly $100, and that's a lot more than ballot measure 30 would have cost each one of us. But it's the cost shifting that will happen because of the rising number of uninsured now that will then not seek primary preventive care because they're uninsured, and they'll wait, they'll be sicker, and they'll wait longer to go, and they'll show up in the emergency room, and that cost is shifted onto all of us.
You know, and if we can just back up for a minute, because one of the things that I think is important is that the Oregon Health Plan in the 90s, it did a number of very good things for all of us, whether we were on the Oregon Health Plan or not. One is that it absolutely kept premium prices at a much more stable level than what other parts of the country were seeing. Hospital emergency rooms and that cost shift that Jenny was talking about, in the year from November 2002 until November 2003, when those first major disenrollment or cuts to the health plan were made, the Oregon hospitals saw an increase of 63% in charity care or uncompensated care, so that's where the cost shift comes from, and 39% increase in bad debt. So all of those things were increasing as the number of uninsured increased. That translates to the rest of us paying more and the cost shift going to us. Hospitals aren't, you know, going to take that.
So the Oregon citizens aren't saving money off of this. They're paying for it in premiums, those that have insurance. As you said, Measure 30 didn't pass, and so we're looking at new cuts because of Measure 30. What do those look like?
Bad.
Yeah,
they look bad. This is the time where I'm telling anyone that's on the Oregon Health Plan, you need to stay enrolled in the Oregon Health Plan. If you need help reapplying, or if you need help because you can't pay your premium, help is available. You can call the OHAC Help Health Line, and that's 866-HEALTH-HELP. Take out all the vowels. It's HLTHHLP. And this is the bad news. Right now, there is roughly 45,000 adults on the Oregon Health Plan standard. There's talks going on in Salem right now, and this is the intent of the state. Right now, there's no clarification whether or not this will be legal or not, but as it is being proposed as of today, come July 1st, there will be no new enrollees allowed in the Oregon Health Plan standard. You know, if you're blind, disabled, a child or pregnant woman, this does not apply to you, but everyone else.
They're covered under OHP Plus,
right,
which is a different program now.
Right. But if you're an adult and if you're thinking about applying in July, you won't be allowed on. And if you're on now, you need to stay enrolled. You need to keep paying your premiums because they have a goal, a number. Between July 1 of this year and July 1 of next year, this number needs to come down to 24,000.
Which is roughly 24% of what we started with in 2002, a little bit less than that.
That's correct, and it's using no state funds. Because of the failure of Ballot Measure 30, there's no state general fund for the Oregon Health Plan standard. The managed care organizations and the hospitals have banded together. They have, they're coming to an agreement to tax themselves. It's a provider tax, and this tax will enable 24,000 individuals to be on the Oregon Health Plan standard. That's a fraction of what it used to be. And this attrition, if you will, that needs to happen between now and July, they're looking at that right now. There's discussion that it will be based on income of the federal poverty level, as low as perhaps 30%, perhaps 50%. So I would say pay your premium, pay your premium, pay your premium. Stay enrolled. If you want to get on, enroll now, because you have until June 30th. Because as of July 1, as it stands now, they will not be enrolling people into the Oregon Health Plan. And call your legislator and talk to them about this, because they're the ones that figure out where the money comes from and where it goes.
Okay, so what is next? We're going to take a quick music break and come right back and talk about what people can do, what the outlook looks like for change in this situation. We're back. This is Hole in the Bucket. My name is Jamie Manuel, and I'm here with Jenny Hamilton from Oregon Health Action Campaign and Mary Beth Healy from Oregonians for Health Security, right?
Yeah.
I got to write that down.
Okay.
And we were just talking about cuts to OHP. One of the key things that's going on with OHP right now is OHP standard enrollment is going to end July 1st. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. You have to get signed up for OHP standard. If you're going to get signed up before July 1st, and there's a way people can do that, right?
That's right.
One thing that's going on actually this week, it's kind of ironic that we're talking today. So this is Cover the Uninsured Week, which is a national program that's funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to really raise awareness about the uninsured. And there is a health fair this Friday at Pioneer Courthouse Square from 10 to 2, where people can actually go, and there'll be folks there to help them sign up for the Oregon Health Plan. I think it's a tremendous opportunity for people. If you have been off the Oregon Health Plan for the last 6 months, go down to Pioneer Courthouse Square on Friday and reapply so that you can get back on the standard on the standard program before the deadline of June 30th.
There will be outreach enrollment workers down there to help you apply. There will be income sheets. You can go if you have questions whether or not you're eligible. And many adults may not be eligible, but your children may be. Children are allowed into OHP at a higher income bracket, and there are no premiums for kids to be covered. And an example would be that a family of four making roughly $30,000 a year, their kids, 0 through 19, would be covered. They would be eligible. The parents would not, but there's also the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, the FIAP program, which they may be eligible for, especially if they have employer-sponsored health insurance available for them, but they can't afford the premiums. The FIAP program is a subsidy program that will help them pay their health insurance premiums. So there are some options. And Friday at Pioneer Square, some folks that can help answer questions will be there.
So how many uninsured children are there in the state right now?
95,000.
95,000? And how many would be qualified under OHP Plus?
Thousands, tens of thousands.
Tens of thousands.
You know, anywhere from 40 to 50,000 kids are currently likely to be eligible and are not signed up for the program because they don't know about it. Or many times parents think, oh, I wouldn't qualify, thereby my children wouldn't qualify. But as Jenny said, that is not the case, and folks should investigate getting their children signed up on the
So we can get a large percentage of our uninsured children mm-hmm. signed up under OHP Plus, and we should do it.
So. That's right. You can also call 1-866-KIDS-NOW and get an OHP application sent to you in the mail.
You can also get it on the web.
Number is 1-866-KIDS-NOW?
Yes.
Okay, folks, write that down. 1-866, I'm sorry.
866-KIDS-NOW.
Okay. And there's also a program, well, I don't think it's a program, but people who have been who have lost OHP standard because they haven't made premiums, some will qualify under ADA guidelines to challenge that.
That's right. The Americans with Disability Act, there's a provision that if you have been on the Oregon Health Plan, if you're an adult, and you have lost your OHP due to a cognitive disability, meaning you were in the hospital, there was some reason, some medical reason that you were unable to put that premium in the mail, you can submit a doctor's letter. Well, first you can petition, and you should do that, but you should also get a letter from your doctor and send it into OHP Central, stating the reason why you were unable to pay your premium. And they're handling it on a case-by-case basis. And the woman's name at OHP Central handling these cases, her name is Carolyn Ross. And I think I have her number. And you can fax her. I have her fax number. It's 503-373-7200. And
Should people do that before July 1st, or is that not dependent on the July 1st deadline?
Well, I would recommend them doing it as soon as possible, especially if they've been disenrolled. Many times they can be reinstated, and their coverage can be retroactive. So if someone was hospitalized on April 10th and they lost their coverage, beginning in May, and now it's the middle of May, OHP will go back to May 1 and cover them. So if there are any doctor bills that that they need to have paid, they could have those covered.
Okay, so people should do that. What's next? Are people looking at a system? Are your organizations looking at a way to correct this, to roll back these changes?
Well, I would say clearly from the standpoint of Oregonians for Health Security, I mean, our mission is to create the healthcare constituency that we need to really move our elected officials to come up with the solutions to provide access to quality, affordable, and secure healthcare. I mean, there are ideas that are permeating throughout Oregon and throughout this country This is a huge issue. We have 44 million uninsured Americans, 511,000 uninsured right here in Oregon. And so there are positive and common sense solutions that we can enact, but it takes political will. And the only way to move political will is to have Oregonians force their legislators and call them to task and hold them accountable for solving this problem.
And how should they get involved to do that?
Well, they could join us and become a healthcare voter. Sign up on our website at www.oregoniansforhealthsecurity.org. You can call us at 1-866-654-2273. We do presentations. We do community canvasses, talking to folks about the healthcare crisis, because I think folks would readily agree that it is a very complex issue, and it takes all of us talking to one another to make folks understand really how much we spend as a country, as a state, as an individual for our healthcare, and holding candidates accountable to getting healthcare costs under control is tantamount for all of us. It is an economic issue. You know, Jenny was been talking about the cuts to the Oregon Health Plan. For every $1 million that we cut from state Medicaid programs, we lose $3 million in business related activity, and we lose 32 jobs. This is not cost effective. We should have a stable healthcare system that people can access the care that they need when they need it. And I believe that if we solve the healthcare crisis in our state, it will be the greatest economic boon to our state.
So the upshot is we're hurting people, we're losing jobs, we're losing federal matching dollars, we're losing business dollars, and we're driving up our premiums?
Right. What part of this is, like, not smart,
it doesn't sound like a really good plan, does it?
There's got to be a better way. That's right. It is very short-sighted.
And so what do you think the outlook is? I mean, do you think the outlook is that we can get the Oregon voters to decide that this is short-sighted and reverse this trend?
Well, I'm an eternal optimist, so I would say yes. You know, I think, again, you know, people need to be educated. You know, Oregonians are busy. They're, you know, they're working. They're trying to, you know, move their life ahead. And so it is up to us to try to educate them about how this relates to them. More and more of them are not getting health care on their job. So it's becoming more of an issue. And I believe we're at a place, because costs are so high, $9,000 a year is the average family premium. Who's got 10 grand hanging out in their bank account, right? Not many. And so if we don't control the medical hyperinflation in this state, we're never going to get this issue dealt with. So it's becoming more, you know, it's not just about low-income people or homeless people, or it's everyone is affected by this crisis now in a way that it has not been before. So I think when issues like that come together and communities come together around an issue like healthcare, that's when change can happen, because it is affecting everyone. Businesses want to provide health care and be responsible employers. They can't do it because the costs are so high. You know, it's a great recruitment tool. If you have health care, you stay at a job where you have health care, because it's not likely to be the same at the next job that you have.
Okay, so we're going to wrap up. Do either of you have any final thoughts for us?
Stay enrolled.
Pay your premium, stay enrolled. I did want to add that it's also being discussed right now that mental health and chemical dependency will be added back as of August 1st for the OHP standard population. And the number to call if you need help with premiums, your hospital bills, application assistance, or assistance getting pharmaceuticals through different pharmaceutical programs, you can call the OHAC Health Help number, which is 866 Health Help, which is in numbers 458-4457. 866-458-4457.
And if you live in the Portland area, go to Pioneer Courthouse Square this Friday from 10 to 2, and folks will be there to help you get signed up for the health plan and answer a lot of questions about access to programs that you may qualify for.
Okay, Mary Beth Healy, Jenny Hamilton, I'd like to thank you both for being with us today. Next up, we're going to go to Jay Thiemeyer, who's going to read some poetry for us.
Thank you.
Thank you both for what you are, the information you gave us on OHP. This first is White Azaleas, What the Dog Skull Was. Once I woke in a bed of white azaleas, not too deep into the woods of eastern Virginia, my van mute on the shoulder of I-64, its form at night against the moonlight, dark, solemn as stone. Besides the thin moon, all was darkness and slim, black reaches looming to the lacking heavens. Out of a rootless and colorless mat of moldy, furry earth, haunted, which crept from below into my bones and where, till this day it remains, I slowly emerged from the depths of a dismembered dream. I lay out my hand idly, feeling for her soft skin and hair, her breast, and felt instead sharp remains, a touch, a solitary fang in the curved, dry-rotted skull of what I have generally ever since considered to be a dog, or what remained of one. I always have imagined a dog, one once of my own, comradely assurance, who had drifted too far, been too curious, broke its leash, and died anonymously amid the Virginia azaleas and dogwoods of spring. The generosity from the dogs of my upbringing, its real undergarment, the only real love I could ever count on that wouldn't escape me, or at least memories childhood remains, like the smell of azaleas staring back at me, at all of it, at all that had seemed so completely, unconditionally valid and present, unmovable, and proved that instead to be such fraud and vacancy in the end. I kept the skull with me throughout my van firmament, replete with clean soil, free from any bleaching or further sacrilege. In homage to a grief too vague, the bone, a salted iron shade, the ongoing definitive cover of my worship. On its temple I scrawled, "Death and Death's Dog, Time," a line enlisted from the Kiowa poet N. Scott Momaday. I posed forever, like a Jesus or a Buddha, the icon's permanent curves and sutured ridges and regions of thought and provinces of dreams on the dashboard of my old VW van, the one Art drew all that stuff on when I bought the paint, black veins and green ivy and red left hands and maple leaves. And there the skull sat imperturbable, serene, inescapable for many a moon and many a mile, grinning in its fangless acceptance and long-dead remorse, a line to memory, an epitaphic glimpse I'd catch at the edge of my vision as I drove, seeking further discovery of what it was that woke me. The accidental touch, the dreamful blade of waking vigilance too intense for chance in the womb of that spring night, where I found time as I lay embedded with azaleas, trying desperately to escape the love lost, lying like a skull wasted in the shade of white azaleas. To introduce this next one, to define homelessness, the first you have to include is deracination. No center, no headquarters, no place to fall back to of one's own, no roots, abandonment, distrust, total suspension, no safety, no control or input in how your life proceeds or unravels. This is titled Waiting. It was written on a clear Sunday morning in the park outside, away from the swamp district, so-called, of TBI shelter on Gleason. That's the poorly lit region in the back of the shelter dorm called the swamp. A quiet moment in the park when there weren't any lines to stand in or anything to wait for since everything was closed till Monday, and Monday was only a speck on the horizon. Barely visible way out there past afternoon, past evening, and past another night of shelter dreams before the new week would commence all over again, one last time again. Waiting, walking to wait, standing, not talking to wait. Sun, haze, vision, film, weightless, walking to a bench in sunlight, veins streaked yellow, feathered in air to sit in without lines, waited this time with no sound, no motion, this early. Salt on the tail, I was seated on a bench, bound, berthed, steamy, skin slippery from the humid air, veined haze, sun, silk film, seeming ease of spotted pauling, waiting, on the bench for absolute of nothing. Juan Bandit time. Area of scum, skimmed clear for seating, alone, silence breathing, even ingest of cool air, egest of warm, unseamed air, sweat still small, gentle beads trickling. Neck becoming a flowing bed, back a beach, tide rising, water collecting in tanks, socks swelling, stream beds, feet steady rotting, swollen, toenails black, peeling, small sores gathering, in clans of attention like clouds on the horizon. Growing pace of baby traces, beads of sweat racing to sit idly at a stop on a park bench waiting for a bus. According to an ordinary schedule for Sunday, feel bugs tug over scum clear ground, wet back, feel tug rutting bugs, sliding in their tracks to get a purchase down my back, crabs tracking up the smooth silky beach of me, backfill, outlanders, netherland, wonderland of water slides, tickling downy reaches, jack-jacking bugs making love on me, hugging, buggering in me downy parts, in me shorts, my socks, my. There is more to waiting than meets the eye. My ordinary feet itch as I wait, having walked and then some more walking, waiting. To stand still awaits me, even as we speak. The aforementioned bus, waited for, not forthcoming, comes, passing me by as I itch and write and itch. Just passing time at the stop, waiting, picking at me nits. More wasted time and dead space of bus time waiting. More about homelessness. Homelessness is despair, displacement, loneliness, waiting for the other boot to drop, hypervigilance, and you learn slowly it can always get worse. Domestic violence drives kids to the streets here in Rose City. In Darfur, in the Sudan, it is much worse. The domestic violence is much worse. The homeless are the norm. Homelessness everywhere is about seeking refuge, whether from the Reagan Revolution or marauders on Camelback in the Sudan or marauders in the Bush administration. This is titled Darfur, which is the province in western Sudan, extremely desolate, being ethnically cleansed. Darfur comes home to us today. We are informed of you. Your tragedy is embraced by us, unknowns, distant, as others are too near, in doorways and dumpsters to embrace, too real, remediable to embrace. But you, dear distant Darfur, we will give you this instant of our attention, our fullest intention, a day in the sun, a moment on the public mind, a drive-by for our care, a spot on the sun we will hear more about only when it reaches our own door. This is what it means for there to be no possibility to say no to a world, not of your making, much less election, but of your utter unmaking. And finally, this is titled Free Fall. The image in Free Fall, with smoke rising from the black ground, a child hung against the peppered yellow sky, stones, fences, broken land, rubble of bones, families, thrown about by the unclad hand of some god, a manicured, bloodless finger on the stitching of the world. In such a sad world, what is a sad girl? An image hung. A lateral pass, we are caught, we are left holding the bag. We must catch her, will catch her, wrap her shark bones in the flag. Carry her from the field with our dread honor, webbed by a question suspended by time, and the food on the table back home in the States, and the missiles and the drones, brain dead to our touch, will carry us indefinitely, while skirting the expression of why this is done, to what point, when will it end?
Thank you, Jay Thiemeyer. Appreciate that. One announcement before we wrap up the show this evening. Dignity Village is having a benefit Saturday evening, May 29th, at the Pine Street Theater. That's at 215 Southeast 9th Avenue in Portland. The benefit will be a play, the Fillmore Hotel, and it'll be performed by the Village Players, which includes, I believe, members of Dignity Village, including Jack DeFari himself, for those of you who know Jack. The suggested donation is $10 to $100, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds, and all of the money will benefit Dignity Village, and it's part of the Village Building Convergence, which is going on right now. So if you're interested, and that starts on the 21st, if you're interested, again, that's May 29th at the Pine Street Theater, 215 Southeast 9th Avenue. And you can, if you have any questions, you can call 503-281-1604. So that concludes today's show. Hole in the Bucket is on 6 to 7 p.m., the second and fifth Wednesday of the month, and we'll be back again on June 9th. If you want to send us your comments or ideas or your announcements related to poverty, housing, and homelessness, you can email us at kbubucket@yahoo.com, or you can mail us at Hole in the Bucket, KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. I'd like to thank Liam Delta for engineering the show today and reading the news with me. And I'd also like to thank Jay Thiemeyer for his spoken words, and our guests Jenny Hamilton of Oregon Health Action Campaign and Mary Beth Healy from Oregon's For Health Security. Coming up next, we've got the KBOO Community Calendar, followed by Nonstop Hip Hop with DJ Audio here at KBOO Portland.